Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi, Bava Kama Daf Kuf Dalet. We are holding 8 lines off the top, right at the 2 dots. Itzma, we have learned an interesting machlekes. Let's say Reuven deposited some money with Shimon, or for any other reason, Shimon owes him money, let's say for a loan repayment or whatever. And Reuven makes a shaliach. He appoints an agent and sends him to Shimon. Not only that, he appointed the shliach in the presence of two witnesses. So he made this a very formal, official appointment. Shliach she'osai be'edim. So now when this shliach, let's call him Levi, approaches the fellow who has the money, Shimon, right? And accepts the money from Shimon on behalf of Reuven. Is Shimon now off the hook? Is he totally absolved? So if something happens with the money en route back to Reuven, Shimon did his job. Look, I gave it to Reuven's official, formal representative, and it's as though I delivered it to Reuven directly. Shall we say so? Or no, Shimon is still responsible for that money until it actually arrives in Reuven's hands. Itmar shliach she'osai be'edim. We have a machlekes. Rav Chisda Amar, havi shliach. He's a full shliach, which means that as soon as Levi took possession of that money, it's as though the money arrived in Reuven's possession. If something happens on the way, it's Reuven's issue, not Shimon's. Rav Amar lehavi shliach. No, we don't treat this fellow to this extent. As though he's representing Reuven, and the money handed to the shliach is still considered under Shimon's responsibility, under Shimon's care, and if something happens to it on the way, Shimon is still responsible. So we don't view Levi's hand as though it's Reuven's hands, despite the fact that he was appointed in front of Edom and made into an official representative. And the Mor explains both sides of the coin. Rav Chisda Amar Havei Shliach. Why, according to Rav Chisda, is he considered a full-fledged shliach? Because Lahachi Tarchi Ve'ukmi Be'edim. The fact is, we assume that the Mishaleach, meaning Reuven, the sender, the reason why he burdened himself to this extent to get Edom on the scene, the Leku B'Reshusay, so that as soon as the Shliach, Levi, accepts the money from Shimon, it should be considered in Reuven's possession, and the Shomer is now Potter. That's why he did such a formal, official procedure in appointing the Shliach. Rabba Amar, no, Lehav Shliach. We don't treat him to this extent. Hachika Amar, all Reuven meant to say was, look, I have Edom here, this is a public thing, everybody sees I'm trusting him, Inish Mehemnu, he's a trustworthy fellow. Look, but it's your decision. Ultimately, it's your responsibility. I know that I appointed him, and I know that I asked him to get the money, and perhaps the reason why he got Edom involved is so that the shliach cannot turn around and deny that he was appointed and that he got the money for Reuven. But in any case, I didn't really consider him an extension of myself. Inish Mehemnu, all I'm declaring is that this fellow is a trustworthy fellow. You can trust him. You can give him the money if you choose to. Is Samchas. If you rely on me and him, Smoich, be my guest. If you choose to send it with him, go ahead. But it's still your responsibility. Tanan, we have a Raya from a Mishnah Bava Metzia. Hashoyel Asapar. Shimon is about to borrow Reuven's cow. Vishulcha Biyad Bnoi. And Reuven decided to, instead of delivering it personally, he decided to send the parah to Shimon, to the borrower, with his son, with Reuven's son, biad avdei, or a slave, biad shluchai, or his shaliach, or oy biad benoi, biad avdei, biad shluchai shel shoyel. Or alternatively, he decided to send it to Shimon using Shimon's son, Shimon's eved, or Shimon's shaliach. Umesa, and the cow died en route. Typically, a borrower is fully responsible, even for accidents, but here, it never arrived. He never took possession, he never took responsibility, despite the fact that it was handed to his agent, Potter, and therefore he's exempt. Now, when we speak about Shimon, the borrower's shaliach, how exactly did this, you know, take place? If Shimon did not appoint him with Edom, and I didn't, so how do we know that he's even a shliach? Apparently he used Edom, so it's public knowledge. And still, Tony de Potter, the Bryce Commission says that even though the cow was placed in Shimon's representative's possession, his official representative, it doesn't revert to Shimon's care. Shimon's not responsible. Uktoni de Potter is exempt. Kashil Rav Chizda, who says otherwise. Could the Amar Rav Chizda b'schiru l'kitay? Hachinami b'schiru l'kitay? Answers the Gemara, no. Shimon never officially appointed the shliach with Edom. Just as Rav Chizda tells us a little bit later down on the daf here, that it wasn't really an official representative. It was just like his schirei l'kitay, his worker, his laborer, his farmer, whatever. So, you know, the owner knew that this fellow works for Shimon, so he decided to use him as a messenger and sent the courier and sent the putter with him. But he wasn't officially appointed as a shliach, and as such, it's unrelated to our discussion. Okay, here comes another attempt. Tanan, our Mishnah. A couple of days ago, a person stole money, and he's about to return it. He has to deliver it personally. Lo yitain, lo lebnoi v'lo l'shluchoi. He shouldn't give it to the son of his victim or the shliach. Rather, give it to him directly. Now, hai shluchoi hechidami. How exactly was this fellow considered a shliach? Again, the same story. If he wasn't appointed through Edom, how do we know what happened? Apparently he was an officially appointed shliach. And still we say that placing money in his possession is not tantamount to having placed it in the hands of the sender. That's a kasha on Rav Chizda. Here comes Rav Chizda. Rav Chizda interpreted and explained and answered. To the fact, he was not an officially appointed shliach, but everybody knew that he works for him, b'schiru l'kitoy, so he took the liberty of giving it to him, but of course, he's not an official representative, and therefore, it doesn't work until it gets to the person himself. But, abo shliach she'asa beidim, let's say, suppose, the victim of this robbery had appointed an official messenger, an official representative, through Edom. My, what would be there? Hachinami, do you mean to say that a shaliach, that we consider him a full shaliach, in which case the gazlan, the robber, could just hand him the money and walk away? If that's the case, the tani sefer. So, why does the Mishnah continue in looking for, you know, for a case where you don't have to actually hand deliver it to your victim? The Mishnah comes up with an interesting twist. The Bezdin's representative, the court's representative, that works. Avol nois nu l'shliach Bezdin. That's the only way you can, you know, take this shortcut route. Why? What about an official shaliach? That also should work, according to Rav Chizda. It says, though I gave it to the person himself. Lif like v'lisne b'dido. The Mishnah should differentiate within the case of the shaliach and say like this. Lif like v'lisne b'dido. Shliach she'asa be'edim. Hochanam edav shliach. A regular, you know, non-official shliach, well, that doesn't work. But a real shliach, that works. Why do we have to sort of switch tracks and find a brand new case of a shliach bezdin? Amri's answer was like this. You're right, but loy psikale. It wasn't a clear-cut halacha, and therefore we kept away from going there. You know why? Shliach bezdin is a more clear-cut halacha, because loy shna asoy nigzal, loy shna asoy gazlan have shliach. A shliach bezdin, a court representative, there it works irrespective of who appointed him, whether the nigzal, the victim, asked for it, or the gazlan asked for it. Have a shliach, we treat him as a full shliach. Putting it in his possession, his care is enough. So therefore, since it's a clear-cut halacha, we chose that route, as opposed to a shliach she'asa be'edim, a shliach which was appointed through Edom. So there, it only works in a one-sided fashion, right? The chi'asa nigzal v'dav a shliach. If the victim appointed him as a shliach, fine, that works. So placing it on his hands is as though it arrived and reached the hands of the nixel. But asoy gazlan, lo yihav a shliach. But if the gazlan asked for it, that doesn't work. So it's not such a clear-cut case. Le'psikalei. And therefore, the Mishnah did not want to go there. Rather, we chose a more clear-cut simple root to speak of, which is a shliach bezdin. Continues the Gemara. Ulafuke mahaitana. This point that we just made, that a shliach bezdin works irrespective of who asked for him. Even if the Goslin appointed him or asked for him, it works. So this point is Lafuki Maitana is in disagreement with the following Shita. Who disagrees? That even by a Shliach Bezdin, you need the Nigzal's involvement. You need the victim to consent to that Shliach. The Sadio, we have a Braisa. Reb Shimon also says, a Shliach Bezdin, right? Sha'asai Nigzal. V'lo'yasai Gazlan. Oyasai Gazlan. So a shliach bezdin, which was appointed by the nigzal, that's okay, right? Or alternatively, the gazlan appointed him and gave him the money, but, and this is the main point, the victim sent his own fellow, his own man, to the shliach bezdin to receive it from him, to accept it from him, and took his money miyadai. So in this case, so it actually arrived into the hands of the shliach, of the nigzal, then it works. Then he's potter, the gazlan is off the hook. But otherwise, if the shliach bezdin is simply appointed by the gazlan, his possession, his holding the item is not enough. Okay, so that's a side point. Okay, let's go back to the original point, which was the case of the shliach, who was officially, formally appointed with Edom. Is he considered exactly like the sender, like the messenger? Or is he his own man? So once again, we have Achlekes, right? Rav Chizer and Rabba, and here we have more Shitas. Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Elazar, and Tavai, they both concur that Shliach Shasa Be'edim, a Shliach that was officially appointed, have a Shliach, we treat him as a full Shliach, and any money arriving to the Shliach is considered having arrived to the actual sender, the messenger. But what about the Kasha that we had from our Mishnah? Right, which said that the gazlan should not hand the money to either the son of his victim or the shliach of his victim. Right, so the question was, well, if we didn't have Edom, so how do we even know that he's a shliach? If it was appointed through Edom, then why can't you just give it to him instead of giving it to the owner himself? He's like, you know, representing the owner, right? That was the kasha we had. So here comes another, a couple of terutzim. Suppose the victim did actually have Edom present when he appointed the shliach, but he didn't formally appoint him as an agent. He said like this. He availed, he sort of offered the services of this shliach. He made him available to the robber. You know, if you want, you can send it through him. I have, you know, no issue if you send the money through him, but don't think he's really representing me to the extent that once he has it, it says, oh, I have it. Not that far. So he tells the shliach, you know, you should know that there's $1 million waiting for me by Shimon who robbed me. You know, it hasn't been coming, you know. He hasn't been sending it to me. So maybe you can, you know, give him a little tug. Ischazile, you know, go pay him a visit. Maybe there's just a technical, you know, hitch holding it up. Maybe, you know, he couldn't find somebody to send the money with. So make yourself available, and perhaps you'll be helpful in getting this thing resolved. So you see, yeah, he asked him, but did he really appoint him as a real shaliach? Did he turn him into a halachic, you know, representative, like a real agent? No. So that's the case of the Mishnah. Therefore, again, it's unrelated to our discussion. Inami, or another option, could Rav Chisda, b'schira l'kita, like Rav Chisda says over there, that this fellow who offered his services was, you know, a laborer, was a helper, an assistant to the victim. So therefore, the robber decided to send the money with him, hoping that it will get to. But again, he was not a formally appointed shliach. Again, it's unrelated to our sugi. Amar v'davar Shmuel, ein mishalchan mayus b'dyukni. On a similar note, so bidyukni, Rashi says, means like this, a simon. Let's say, for example, a signet. right? A personal symbol or something that indicates that I am representing this fellow. So he has a letter with a signature, with a stamp, okay? So now he shows up to the Baal Pikud, and again, a similar case where Reuben had deposited money by Shimon. Shimon has $1 million, and Levi decides to offer services. He shows up to Levi's house, knocks on the door. Look, I'm representing Reuben. Hand me the money, I'll bring it to him. No, ein mishalchen mois b'dyokni. Shimon should not take the liberty, he shouldn't take the risk of sending the money with this fellow, because ultimately, I mean, he can choose to do so, but ultimately he's still achroi, he's still responsible. There's no way of verifying and confirming that in fact Levi, this visitor, is really legally representing Reuben. Even if there are two witnesses signed on this, you know, this stamped paper, it doesn't mean much. Rabbi Yechon Amar, no. I agree with the first part, but not the second part. If you have Edom here, it's pretty clear that, you know, the purpose of, you know, Reuben handing him the signature with the Edom was to basically send a message to Shimon, look, look, here's my friend Levi, hand him the money. Says the Gemara, Amri. So the question was like this: L'Shmuel Maita Kanto. Shmuel was the first opinion here that Shimon cannot be confident in any situation with sending the money with Levi, because who says he's really representing? Right, right. It doesn't work. So Maita Kanto, what's the easy way? What's the, you know, practical way for Reuben to get his money back if he wants to do it by way of, you know, of a shliach, of a courier? Says the Gemara, there is a route to take, which is, you know, foolproof. Kiyad Rabbi Abba, it was a story involving Rabbi Abba. Havi masik zuzi, Rabbi Yisr Barachama. So he had a monetary claim, he had some money sitting by Rabbi Yisr Barachama. Amalei Rav Safra. So Rabbi Abba heard that Rav Safra was traveling to that town. He says, do me a favor, Bahadi da Asis, you know, on your way back, you know, over here, please, I see Nini Ali, do me a favor, pick up the money. Okay, Ki'azal Hassan. Rav Safra arrives at that place. Amalei Rav Abris, Rav the son of Yosef, who was the, you know, the shamer holding the money. So his son turned to the visitor, he started interrogating him. Really, you're going to take the money from my father, and now, right? Mikasav lachiskabalti, where's your document? Which says his kabalti. Basically, what it means is that the owner of that money, the depositor, will have written on a paper, it is considered as though I personally receive the money when you give the money to Rav Safra. So his receiving of the money is tantamount to my receiving of the money, and you're done. You're off the hook. Where's that? Do you have such a document? Which would pretty much absolve us as soon as we give you the money. Amar Leil Lo, he says, I'll tell you the truth, I don't have that type of paper. Yachi, he says, if that's the case, go back home. Zil Bereisha v'yichtev l'chayis kabalti. First go to Rabba, go back to him, and let him give you this this note, and then you'll come back again. L'soif, okay, after a little bit, he was thinking it over. Amar Leil, he says, you know, actually, well, before you go, very important. The truth is, it's not going to help you much. Even if you go back and you get that sheet, that document of iskabalti, it's not going to help you. You know why? Rashi brings that Rabbi Abba was an older man. So there's always a concern that he might pass away in between. Dilma ada asis. Okay, you'll go back to Rabbi Abba. He'll ask him for iskabalti. That explains, by the way, why, you know, he couldn't come himself, the older man. So fine, he'll go and write you a note, iskabalti. To me, may concern, as soon as you give my money to Rav Safra, it's as though you gave it back to me. Okay, but you know what can happen in the meantime? Dilma da'asis, perhaps by the time you make it back here, Shachid Rabbi Abba. Perhaps Rabbi Abba will pass away. In which case, all his possessions, his assets, transfer down to his kids. So the money basically now belongs to his heir, says Yisayim, and he's no longer in charge. So he has no ability to authorize you anymore at that point, right? By the time you make it back here, He may no longer be in charge. He may no longer be in the driver's seat. Right? This kabbalti, the rabbav, this kabbalti that you got from rabbava is worthless. Lav klumu. Okay, so don't bother doing this. Amar Leh, so he said, okay, velamata kanta, so what's the solution? So he says like this, I have one way to solve this. Zil nikninu loch agav ara. You know what? Go back to rabbava and let him, listen to this, let him grant you this money with a kinyan called kinyan agav. Basically, he gives you a little piece of land, well, you know, an inch of property, and he bundles together this loan with that. Basically, he's giving you ownership of the property with the loan. So now it's your loan. You, Rav Safra, you're the owner of that loan. So it's your claim. It's your money. Agavara, v'to'at k'sev l'nis kabalt. And you come back here, and you write us the receipt, this kabalt receipt, and take the money. Now we're done. So we covered all the bases. Right? Because Rav Safra now is the claim owner. We find a similar story with Rav Papa, who did the same thing. Kihod Rav Papa, right? Such as Rav Papa's story. Hava Masik, Tresar, Alfei Zuzi Bechuzoi. He also had this 12,000 Zuz, you know, claim with somebody from Bechuzoi. And what did he do to get it back? Akninu Nialei, the Rav Shmuel Bar Abba. So Rav Shmuel Bar Abba was traveling to that town. So he says like this, you know what? Please do me a favor, collect it for me. But first, he gave it to him. He was makna to him. Agav Asifa de Beisei, bundled together with the threshold of his house. So basically, he made a kinyan. Now it belongs to Shmuel Bar Abba, which authorized him, enabled him to go and collect it legally. And then he brought back the money. Kiyasa. So when he made his way back with the money, Nafak La Pei. So Rav Papa was so excited that he got his money back. He went out to greet him until all the way to this place, Ad Tavach, to this place called Tavach. Okay, back to the Mishnah. So basically, the Mishnah says that Chaimish is so important, right? If you steal $100 and you make a Shvuah to deny that claim and then you admit, Halacha is, it triggers a whole process. You have to pay the Keren, the principal, the 100, an extra fifth, Chaimish. And Asham a carbon as well. Now suppose that's what happened, and then he decided to pay up the $100, and he denied the chaymish the extra 25. And then he admitted on that too. So now that chaymish becomes principal. It becomes the, you know, the new principal of the new claim, right? Which he had denied and sworn on. And on that he has to add another 20%. And so on and so forth. So clearly the chaymish is not just sort of like an external entity, a sort of fine. It's actual mumming. It's money that you owe him. To the extent that if you deny its existence, it's as though you denied having taken money from him, and that triggers the whole process anew. Another Karen Chaimish and Hashem on that. Alma Chaimish Mamainhu, clearly. Chaimish is called mumming, which you owe him personally. V'mayis Mishamal Yarshin. And therefore, if the Ganav died, not only do the Yarshin have to pay the actual money, the Karen, they have to pay the chaymish as well, because it's a legitimate monetary claim. And likewise, we learned another angle to this point. Nosanasa keren, right? Let's say he repaid the actual principal, but v'nishba l'chaymish. Then again, denied owing him the chaymish. What happens now? That chaymish becomes subject to another chaymish, because that chaymish becomes sort of the item of the new claim. It turns into principal. Because it's been disputed with a shvur, so v'nishba l'chaimish, har is a meisiv chaimish l'chaimish. He has another fifth onto that fifth, which now turned into principal. So once again, we see the same point. Alma, clearly, the chumsha, the fifth, mamayna, who is called, is considered an actual monetary claim, in which case, if you deny, go ahead and deny it, that chaimish now turns into principal, on which you add another chaimish, and so on and so forth. V'tani nami hachi, and we're going to prove again as well that the Yerushim will pay the chaymish of their father. V'tani nami hachi, agozel chaver v'nishbaloi, So he robs and he swears falsely, umeis, and he dies. Yerushin meshamim keren v'chemish. Right? So they pay it all, the principal and the chemish. Uptur ben ha'asham. Of course, they don't pay the asham because, as Rashi says, even if he would have designated the carbon during his lifetime, it's too bad, it's too late. Ein kapara lemesim, says Rashi. You can't bring a carbon kapara after death. So that's out of the picture. But keren they pay because that's the actual claim, and the chemish as well. Clearly, the chemish becomes incorporated to the actual claim. It's not just a fine, it's not just a kapara. V'yarshin b'nei shlumik chumsha davu and havu. So clearly, the yarshin are obligated on the chemish of their father as well. Almo chemish v'maynu v'yishlumik l'yarshin. So again, you see this point. The chemish is treated just like the original money. And as we explained, that's why the yarshin paid. That's why if he denies the existence of the chemish, he has to add a chemish onto that as well. Okay. V'raminu, here comes a kasha on this point. Rashi brings that this is a brisa in Teres Kayanim, which begins with the pasuk Asher Gozal. So basically he's going to admit that he stole the money on which he swore, right? So now he's admitting. And he adds the chemish and the asham. The brisa starts with the words Asher Gozal al gzeila hu mosif chemish v'lo al gzeilas av. You're meant to know that the chemish is only applicable on your own personal robbery. The money that you stole, you don't add a chemish on your father's gzeila. V'raminu adayin ani emir, Saul still insists that yeah, a masai eino yimshalom chemish al gzeil av. When is a son exempt from the chemish on his father's gzeil? Bizman shelo nishba lehu v'lo aviv. When nobody swore falsely, not the son, not the father. But let's say somebody did swear falsely on the original money. Who? Let's say the son did, although the father didn't, but the son made a shvur. Aviv lehu, or the father swore falsely, not the son. Or both together. Who? V'aviv. What about this type of situation? Minayin, how do we know that here as well? The son will not add. Eichaymesh, tamalayim, asher gazal, asher ashak. We learn from here, only if the son himself was the one who stole the money. But not in this case. He didn't steal. He didn't withhold wages. So clearly, a son never pays chemish. This contradicts our point. Chemish is mamain, and once the father has got to pay it, then it carries over to the son. Amar Rav Nachman le'kash, answers like this. It all depends. Kan shahoyde. If father admitted to the fact that he stole and that he swore falsely, so at that point the chemish kicks in. It triggers the keren, the chemish, and the asham. So of course, it carries over to the son. He's got to pay the whole deal, the keren and the chemish. Kanchali hayda. The bride, however, speaking with the father, did not admit to his sin. Nor did the son. So there's no chemish for the son to pay. Well, Eloi Hoidev, nobody admitted, Karen Namelu Mishalim, so why is he even paying anything? How do we know that he owes the money? V'chitei Machinamidle Mishalim, so perhaps you're right, he doesn't pay the Karen either. But that's incorrect. From the fact that the Brisa is pursuing the chemish and pinpointing the fact that he doesn't pay the chemish, it's clear that he pays the Karen. It was differentiating. Karen he pays. Lememer the Karen Mishalim. Karen he pays. No, just not the Chemish. That's a problem. V'oitani, another question. The Brisa continues. V'adayni ani oimer. But I'll still insist and say like this. Ema sahu Mishalim Karen al-Gezel Aviv. When will a son pay the principal, the Karen of his father's Gezela, his mansha nishbahu v'aviv? Perhaps that's only when father and son swore falsely on account of this claim. But let's say Aviv lehu, father swore but not son. Hu v'lo aviv, son not father. Lehu v'lo aviv, minayin, no son, no father. What happens there? Tamalay mar gzeila v'oishik avei de pekada. We learn from these extra psukah, extra words, that son will pay the keren in these cases as well. Yesh Talmud. So we have a source. Now, what does Yesh Talmud mean? V'yasev Rav Huna. Rav Huna was sitting and saying over this whole halacha, v'kamel hashmata, with the words Yesh Talmud. which were not clear, you know, in terms of what they meant. Amali Rabba Bris, Rabba his son asked him, what do you mean, father? Yesh Talmud Kamar Mara? Do you mean to say that there's a source from the Pasuk that a son, in fact, will be obligated to pay his father's robbery, his father's gezel? Or is it just that you're saying, look, it appears logical, the son is responsible, but there's no pasuk. What do you mean? Source or no source? No, actually, I said yesh talmud. There's a clear source for this. I meant because of the extra words in the pasuk. A son has to pay. So, you know, we had one part of the braisa. Does son pay chaimish? No. So he said, okay, because nobody admitted. Well, if nobody admitted, why is he paying anything? And part two of the braisa clearly indicated that he's paying keren, which indicates that somebody admitted. Because only then do we trigger the whole process of keren, chaimish, etc. So basically, if there was an admission, how can you differentiate? Keren up, chaimish down? I mean, either all or nothing, right? Ela mai lo hoida. Oh, apparently when we said that there was no admission, we didn't mean that nobody admitted. Lo hoida aviv v'hoida b'noi. Father did not admit during his lifetime, but son did. So in this case, son will pay the keren, but not the chaimish. Why? Because father never admitted, so the chaimish was never triggered, was never activated. Well, asks the Gemara, hold it. In one of these cases we spoke about, we mentioned where son and father made a shvur. That was one of the cases we spoke about. Right? Hu v'aviv, remember? Hu v'aviv minayin. Father and son both swore. Still, there's no chaimish. Hold it, why not? V'nechayiv b'noi achaimish ashvur adidei. So I understand that father never admitted. Okay, so there's no chaimish on account of the father's admission. There's no admission. But son swore, right? We're speaking that both father and son swore to deny the claim. So son swore, and then he admitted. So that itself should be sufficient grounds to trigger a chaimish payment because of his own violation. How do we get around that? So again, to summarize, basically, chaimish is mamim, so father is chayiv chaimish, it gets transferred to the kid. But if father is not chayiv chaimish, such as in this case where he never admitted, he swore but never admitted, so there's no chaimish there. Right? But the question is, in this one case where father and son both swore and son admitted, let there be a chaimish on account of the son's admission. Amr's answer is like this. The robbed goods are no longer here. So really, legally, the son is not responsible anymore. That's the halacha. Father steals something and consumes it, destroys it. Son is not obligated to repay that. So even if the son denied it and swore, who cares? He didn't swear to deny a monetary claim because there was no monetary claim against the son himself. So it's basically not considered a shvua in this respect. Rashi calls it a shvua spitu. It's just, you know, he spoke falsely, but it doesn't have the same consequence as a false oath pertaining to denial of a monetary claim, right? Big difference. So, as such, the son's denial, his false shvur, etc., does not trigger a chaimish. Well, ibish ain't gzeil kayemis, and the question is the other way. If there's no gzeil around to speak of, I feel keren amalei misham shouldn't pay anything. We're working with the sort of the split that he pays keren, not the chaimish. It's either both here or both not. Well, it's richadika chayis nachas. Oh, apparently we're speaking that if there's a chayis nachas, it's a term referring to real estate, basically, because real estate is guaranteed, right, to provide your claim. So it's called achrayis nechasim. And father stole, consumed the goods, but he has real estate that he left behind, and that got carried over to the kids. And Rashi brings the Gemara later that, in this case, the kids have to repay their fathers for their father's, you know, shenanigans. They covered avim to protect, to preserve their father's honor. So yeah, the actual Karen they'll repay, but that's it. Asks the Gemara, hold it. Even if they have karka from the father, who cares? Milva al pehi. Umilva al peh, einay goive, loymena yershim, veloymena lekuches. The money that father owed was never documented in a document. It's not a milva b'shtar. It's like a milva al peh. It's like a verbal commitment. It's not documented, right? So the halacha is this type of obligation, this type of claim cannot be collected from the yarshim or lekuches, from heirs or from customers who purchased his property, you know, after the incident. So why are the kids at all responsible? Amri, the answer is like this. B'shamad b'din. Father stole. And then the Bezdin got involved and issued a verdict against him that he has to pay. So at that point, it changes his obligation from just a personal obligation to an officially established legal obligation. And at that point, it's elevated, becomes formalized. It's like a milva b'shtar, which can be collected from, you know, from yersh. Well, ask the Gemara one second. Ibishamad b'din. If we're speaking that the father was obligated, was formally obligated by the bezin to pay. Okay, so now that chiyuv carries over to the son, and is embedded in, you know, in the real estate that he inherited from the father. So now when the son turns around and denies that obligation, and makes a shvu and goes ahead and admits. So that should trigger a full-fledged process. Keren and Chaimish and Hashem. Afilu Chaimish Namim Shalom. So again, why are we splitting between Keren and Chaimish? Amar Rav Huna, Breder Rishu, I'll explain to you why. There's never a Chaimish pertaining to denial of a real estate lien, a lien on property. And Rashi explains like this. You know why? Let's remember. Why is a fellow to pay a chaimish at all? Because of the shvua that he made, right? And the halacha is that we never make a shvua. A shvua is never applied to a claim pertaining to property. That's a halacha based on psukim. So now when this son inherited his father's, you know, obligations, which as we explained, is only his because he has karka from his father, in which the father's, you know, obligations are sort of embedded and absorbed. And now when the son turns around and denies that claim, and makes a shvua to deny it. So technically, you know what he's doing? He's denying a claim, which is property specific, which pertains to property. After all, that's only reason why he would be obligated to pay, because he has the karka from his father. It's called a kfiras shibud karkois. Denying a claim pertaining to karka. And a shvua on that is not really a legal shvua. You don't apply shvua to karka. So that shvua, even if it's discovered to be false, cannot trigger any liabilities, any consequences, including the chaimish, which typically happens after admitting having made a false oath. So that explains why he pays the keren, not the chaimish. Keren because of the father, but no chaimish because of due to his shvua. Rava Amar, I'll give you another explanation why keren yes, chaimish not. True, son made a shvua, so why not a chaimish? Hachav my skin was speaking kan shahaya diske shel aviv mifkedes biad achirim. Let's go back to the original discussion. Father stole. Okay? Passed away before he got a chance to admit. Son was Yerush. And Rashi says, was speaking that he was Yerush, the actual, you know, loot, the money that was stolen. Well, it wasn't consumed, it wasn't destroyed, like we said before, it's here. Father deposited that disc here, that, you know, container with the money, biyad acher. He put it in the bank. Son had no clue, had no idea where the money was. He thought it was gone. And he made a shvua. I don't have it, sorry. Unbeknownst to him, it existed in the safe. Father's money was sitting in somebody's hands. And son denied it. Innocently denied it. And then he admitted. Keren mishalms, he has to pay the actual principal. The amount that was stolen he has to pay, but the ha'isi, because it's here. Chaimish le mishalm, he doesn't pay the chaimish due to the shvua. Dechi ishtaba, because his shvua bekushta ishtaba. He did it innocently, thinking it no longer existed. He had no clue the money was around. So in this case, he's exempt from any chaimish liabilities. So now let's recap. Chaimish is considered mumming, pertaining to at least 2 points. A yerush typically has to pay the chaimish for his father. And if one denies the chaimish, it sort of grows, it grows interest. You add a chaimish on that chaimish, because that original chaimish becomes actual principal, principal liability. We do find an exception to this rule of the yerush in a case where father did not... either didn't make a shvua or didn't admit to making a shvua. So in this case, there's no chaimish coming from the father to the son. So although in some cases, son is still responsible for the keren, such as when he has achrayas nechasim or when the money is still around, but the chaimish will not be applied due to the reasons we explained. Let's just go back. So the first part discussed the case where a person appointed a shliach, even with edim. Is he fully a representative or not? Machlekes. And a foolproof method of sending money back to the sender with an agent is by having the agent sort of assume ownership of that amount, of that money, of that claim, in which case, once you give it to him, you're safe and sound. All the best to you and atzlacha rabbah.